It's cute in like a slug way. I don't mean it in like a baby way. It's cute in a slug way.
Welcome to Rebalancing Act. We are Kieran and Leslie Ann, two law grads and friends. We know that climate change is here and that we have to solve it. So every second Friday, we come together and talk about how we get there. Last episode, you heard us extol the virtues of dirt, earth, soil, where we get nutrients, where we grow our food, and so much more. We also talked about how we're running through soil and other nature much, much more quickly than it's being replenished. We're actually running out of fertile earth. But like we always say, the best kinds of problems are ones with solutions. And today we have a guest, Rob Godfrey, whose startup Tree Economy is seeking to solve that problem by valuing nature, or natural capital, in terms that make sense to the market. Yes, I am talking about money, but I'll let Rob explain the concept to you himself.
I suppose I would say Tree Economy is a climate impact startup, first and foremost. Really, we are, I think, developing new tools that take advantage of remote sensing, machine learning technologies to bring greater precision, rigor, transparency, and ultimately trust to nature-based solutions offsetting, which is an industry and a sector that probably lacked all of those attributes for a while. And that's partly down to the sorts of tools that have been relied upon for such a long time now to tell us how much carbon is in an area of land. Those methods haven't changed much in centuries. We still rely on people getting out onto the land, trudging about with tape measures, and then relying on a variety of allometric growth equations to try to understand what's really there. And so that really undermines, I guess, the investability and overall trust in voluntary forest-based carbon offsetting.
So I'll pause here for just a second to explain what carbon offsetting is and how it relates to climate change. Carbon offsetting refers to the practice of individuals, companies, or other institutions paying to perform or maintain a practice that sequesters carbon as a means of offsetting, quote-unquote, the mass of the carbon that the person is emitting through transportation, food, heavy industry, all of the ways that humans are currently generating carbon. Yes, we need to tackle those carbon emissions at the source. But carbon offsetting can help individuals who want to offset their own emissions or bridge the gap while we do deep decarbonization, and generally take actions that we want to be doing anyways, like protecting forests. In fact, the practice of sequestering carbon in trees and soil is one of the most popular types of offsets. But carbon offsetting, especially through forests and soil, hasn't always been transparent and trustworthy. How do you even value a tree? What about if the offset that you're purchasing can't be tracked, and you find out that the forest you purchased an offset to protect was already under conservation? These problems are real, and they strike at the heart of what Tree Economy is trying to solve.
Ultimately, to sell offsets that are credible and thoroughly measured, verified, and monitored over time. So what we really want to do is help buyers discriminate between what is a good project and what is a bad one, to try to direct money, of which there's loads around, towards truly worthy projects. And on top of that, we really want to offer ordinary landowners, farmers, estate owners, smallholders, an opportunity to gain access to the voluntary carbon market, to be rewarded for sustainable land management, and to secure a new stream of green climate positive income.
That sounds really appealing, and like somebody's got to do it. How did you actually meet your co-founder, and what made you decide to focus on this issue? One aspect of the climate crisis that can be overwhelming is the all-consuming nature of it. There are so many problems we need to fix. So what led you and your co-founder to focus on this one, and in particular, on natural solutions, as opposed to something higher tech?
I think my co-founder and I really shared a frustration that money isn't going to the right things. And something we need to invest in with real urgency is the protection and restoration of nature at the end of the day. And along with it, carbon removal at scale. the IPCC and others have indicated that there's no way really to meet our Paris climate commitments without large-scale carbon removal. Unfortunately, the technologies that right now exist to suck CO2 out of the atmosphere, those hard engineered technologies, I should say, are still immature, some ways off. And we've been sort of staring a solution in the face for a long time, but perhaps not putting the power of the market behind it. And that's trees and nature-based carbon capture. And there's lots of reasons we ought to be investing more in nature. And it's not just because of climate at the end of the day. I mean, we're facing meta crisis. My co-founder and I both recognize that nature-based solutions really offer the potential for win-win-wins.
We do love a good win-win-win, don't we, Leslie Ann?
Always, always. If there is any way that we can benefit in more than one way, we do love a good win-win-win.
And honestly, I'm tired of climate solutions being portrayed as sacrifices. Like, why have just renewable energy when you can also have lowered rates of asthma and death from air pollution?
And more turtles.
And more turtles.
We understood the problem and then started to examine how nature-based solutions get. It's through the voluntary forest carbon offset market, but there are huge issues in the market. Basically, it lacks precision. It lacks transparency. There are a lot of intermediaries, brokers that sometimes sit between the tree that's been planted and the end buyer of the carbon credit, such that it can be difficult to know if your carbon has even been captured, let alone where. And there's a lot, in addition to sort of that opacity, there's a lot of unreliability. You put all these things together and you can understand why people aren't viewing carbon offsetting and natural capital, I suppose, more generally as a viable investment opportunity. That if we're going to heal the biosphere, rebalance the climate at the sort of pace that we need to, we can't necessarily rely on moral suasion or on altruism. So how can we get the market to work, leverage finance at scale to direct it towards worthy projects?
You've touched on something really interesting for me with the concept of scalability. What does it mean to draw down or sequester carbon at scale? At first glance, things like direct air capture, essentially sucking carbon out of the sky with machines, seem like a really great idea. And they are, but they're operating at the scale of tons right now. But we need to sequester millions, billions, and maybe even trillions of tons of carbon. What makes Treeconomy's solution different?
With climate change, it's almost always a case of yes and rather than either or. It would be foolhardy in the extreme to ignore the greatest technology that we sort of have at our disposal, and that is nature. I think some of the great barriers to scale right now are obviously cost, and I think that will continue to come down dramatically, but right now it costs hundreds of dollars to suck a ton of carbon out of the atmosphere with giant fans and a lot of energy as well. And I think it's so vital, again, to recognize that we have more problems than just too much carbon in the atmosphere. And nature-based solutions deliver a variety of what we call co-benefit. If we're looking to address the 17 SDGs, for example.
SDGs. Those are the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, released by the UN and adopted by all member countries in 2015. They are described by the UN as a call for action by all countries, poor, rich, and middle income, to promote prosperity while protecting the planet. And they span from ending poverty to improving health and education, reducing inequality, spurring economic growth, to, of course, addressing climate change and environmental degradation.
And we want to receive boom for buck, as it were, in order to address SDG 13, climate action, but life on land, nature-based solutions, I think, crucially can function to advance climate justice, basically. So if you think about where many of these projects are likely to get off the ground or operating right now, it's in areas of the global south. Where are people buying carbon credits? Well, it's the large polluters, companies responsible for climate change in many cases, headquartered in the global north, as it were. And so in addition to just being the best and cheapest tool we right now have. There's a really appealing and I think necessary sort of almost equalizing climate justice aspect to nature-based solutions.
I've become more and more aware, as I feel like the cultural discourse has, that inequalities are built into the way that capital is funded by organizations, and how, depending on the person that is heading up that company, their race, gender, or other personal characteristics, they may or may not receive venture capital to start a technology-intensive endeavor like direct air capture, for example. Mechanisms like nature-based solutions that help communities empower themselves are really crucial to dealing with the inequalities that have contributed to and now flow from climate change. More democracy is always a good thing when it comes to our climate, our civic health, and also just our enjoyment of life.
In order to plant a tree, you don't need enormous volumes of capital to construct a facility. It's within reach of almost anyone to just go out there and plant a tree. What isn't perhaps so accessible is the market that can help to reward people for those actions. But really, through tree economy, that's something we're hoping to change, to use these technologies to bring the cost of measurement and verification down, to highlight worthy projects and ensure that people around the world are rewarded for those actions. So I think that democratic element and that accessibility of planting a tree or making the choice not to drain a peat bog, for example, or restoring a degraded patch of pasture or former grazing land. All of these things, you don't have to be a titan of industry or a massive capitalist to be able to do. And I think that's so vital.
That's great. And to be frank, all of this starting up sounds so exciting. Can you tell us a little bit about what a day or maybe a week in your own life and the life of Treeconomy looks like these days?
Yeah, absolutely. Treeconomy was founded about a year and a half ago when I met my co-founder at Imperial at a graduate master class on transitions to a net zero economy. He presented the idea of using drones to quantify forest carbon capture. I said, that sounds amazing. How can I get involved? And we've been working on it ever since. And we're still small and we're fast moving. And I guess one of the really gratifying things about all that is that no 2 days are the same, really. There's some routine to it. And there are obviously things that need to get done each day, but there's a huge amount of variety, which is really exciting, knowing that we're, I think, pursuing a worthwhile goal and pushing a mission that really means something. As far as what's been keeping us busy lately, we were fortunate enough to be recognized by Innovate UK, the UK government's innovation funding agency, with a bit of grant funding through something called the Sustainable Innovation Fund, which was actually set up to support mostly small and medium-sized businesses that were developing solutions, products, services that could help the UK find its feet again after COVID and build back better and hopefully build back greener. We've got a little bit of funding now, which has been enormous in helping to grow our tech team. And so we're very focused these days and will be over the next couple of months on the research and development, finding our models, testing them, and sort of deploying them in the field. I spend a fair bit of my time right now trying to support that project, supporting the tech team, even though I'm not particularly technical myself, sort of in an overseeing and project management function, if you will. But on top of that, I do speak to quite a lot of people, so on both sides of the business. So hopefully it came through clearly enough earlier, but Treeconomy is a sort of sits in the middle. We sit between, again, we call the supply side, so landowners that can generate credits, and the demand side, again, normally corporate customers that are looking to buy high quality credits.
Thank you very much to Rob Godfrey for being on the podcast. If you want to contact him to find out more about his business, or if you want to, say, invest in Treeconomy, you can find him at rob@treeconomy.co. 1.5 years after starting, Treeconomy seems like it's thriving. We are very excited to see what kind of progress they make over the next year and a half. Speaking of startups, Leslie Ann, I feel like I have a good startup story for you.
Ooh, yes. Tell me your startup story.
So There was a point in time in which I was a bit into Bitcoin. And you might ask yourself, can someone be only a little bit into Bitcoin? Aren't you kind of really into it or not into it at all? And I would like to say that I toed the line between being a bit into Bitcoin and really crazy into it. But, I mean, my time at a Bitcoin news education startup, which is what I decided to do after my third year, sorry, it's what I decided to do after my second year of undergrad, was, like, both a really good look at the promise and, like, the cultural issues with startups. And what it really taught me, actually, was about the success or failure of your startup really depends on the team that you're working with. And because I didn't have a good team, you know, my startup was not a statistical anomaly. It didn't end up working. It didn't even make it through the whole summer that I was there. The founder of the startup spent, I think, I want to say like 10% of the capital on a domain name, which might give you a good example of some of the issues that we faced at the startup. But it was honestly a really good experience for me because it just showed me the potential of like a really great, creative, motivated group of people and how much change you can do, how quickly and how dynamically you can do it when you're working sort of under few institutional constraints. And I think, you know, my time working at that startup made me understand how startups are actually a really great way to tackle the climate crisis, because I think it demands a lot of new, fresh thinking and like the configuration of startups and the lack of institutional constraints, the ability to create a new culture that really aligns with your values. All of those things really contribute to the type of thinking we need to solve the climate crisis.
That's a really, really interesting point. I've never done the startup thing myself, but I have some really close friends who have, and I think you're so right about the importance of a good team, because so inherent in a startup is that you're operating with very little money to start, and you probably won't really be making money at the beginning. And so you need a team that will continue to work together and work well together and push through that. And I've seen teams that do that and teams that can't do that. I've seen teams that work well for a little while and then something goes badly and someone leaves, and sometimes that's the end of the startup and sometimes they're able to keep going. But I think that phase where things are really, really hard is something that we feel in the climate movement anyway, but we're so often not working towards any way of, I don't want to say monetizing, because it's not about making money necessarily, but it's about the sustainability that an income brings in to a project or a movement. And so using a startup and understanding that you're going to go through that phase, which, I mean, think about our podcast. How many unpaid hours have we put into this because we believe in what we're doing? It's the same thing. That same feeling can pull together a startup that can then start to generate income and become self-sustaining as a climate solution. And I think that's really powerful, especially since we are putting in so much of this unpaid labor anyway, because it's something that we care about. And I mean, oh God, I have one friend who, he is living hard that startup life in Europe right now. Like, he lives off chickpeas.
Are we talking canned or dry?
I think canned, which, like, good for him. Is a splurge, but I think
that canned chickpea money,
but I think partly because I'm not sure he has the access to a cooking space where he could deal with dried chickpeas. But his idea is so exciting and promising. It's about making the internet more accessible to people who don't speak English, French, Spanish, some of those big, really, I don't want to say mainstream languages, is there a better way, really common languages. It's about making it accessible to folks who speak smaller or dialect languages, which is so important, especially as the internet becomes more and more of an assumption in people's lives as opposed to a privilege, which it really is. And so he's working like so hard because he believes in what he's doing. And I think so many people can be said to be doing the same for climate work. And I think building that startup structure and supporting startups doing this work could be such an important space for change to happen.
That's really exciting. It makes me happy to hear that his startup has a public interest element too. I think, as was briefly discussed in my interview with Rob, you know, I didn't realize until more recently when I was actually listening to the podcast Startup about how venture capitalists largely have come to be. And it was the type of people who were early investors in what we think of as the biggest tech startups, example, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, et cetera, et cetera. And the type of person that would invest in that kind of startup isn't a bad type of person, but it is maybe one particular type of person. And like, those are the people with the resources to now continue funding new startups. And it's a bit of a self-perpetuating system, I think, or has the potential to be. So I think it's just so important that diversity in the types of startups that are funded and the types of founders that are supported continues to be important, because that's how we're going to get a wider and more diverse and I think public facing range of ideas as well.
I think you're totally right. And it's, yeah, venture capital gets a bad name sometimes, I think, because it is always that specific type of person funding specific types of startups, but the idea of people contributing to these ideas that they believe in isn't a bad structure. I don't think it's not inherently problematic. It's just turned out to be that way, but I think it has so much power behind it more generally, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. It really does. And I'm excited to see, you know, every day, honestly, literally every day on a daily basis. Thank you, Bloomberg Green Newsletter. I read about new startups that are doing really exciting and awesome things. And I just know that not all of them, as is the nature of startups and as was my own experience, are going to succeed. But I think the excitement, the drive, the potential is really there for climate solutions in all areas. Did you know that? I mean, I know you know, but you know, the idea that cement is a huge carbon problem. There are people working on that. There are multiple startups with that as their sole mission. And I find that really heartening.
I love that. I want everyone who is interested in business to find like a niche climate issue and get behind it. I love that.
Absolutely. That is the way. And thank you, Rob and Treeconomy, for showing us a little taste of that, for showing us one idea that's really exciting with passionate people behind it gaining traction. And I know that I'm really excited to see where it goes.
We love to see it. Thank you so much.
That's it for this week, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you feel like you're not getting enough Rebalancing ACT in your lives in between episodes, you can sign up for our newsletter at rebalancingact.ca. And follow us on Instagram at @rebalancingact or @rebalancingact_ on Twitter. And you will find us here in 2 Fridays from now, probably talking about bogs.
Always talking about bogs. Bogs be boggin'.
Always.